Fixing it.
Okay, and so our next one is Emma. I don't know her personally, but she's got 2.5 years. I've already heard great things about. She's already talking out at the prison, and I've already heard things about it. So I'm looking forward to hearing her talk. Come on, yeah. Emma.
Sharing. My name is Emma. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Emma.
And thank you for letting me share with you guys today. My sponsor told me not to plan, but I planned a little bit, so it's like my second time speaking, so excuse my nerves. What was it like? I had my first drink when I was 13, and contrary to what I've heard a lot of people talk about when they tell their story, like they had their magical first drink. Mine was awful. I had an awful first experience, and I think that testifies to how cunning, powerful, and baffling this substance is, because I can't tell you why I would have my second drink after an experience like that. So basically, my friend and I were drinking out of these very large glasses. We're drinking vodka straight with like popcorn as a chaser. And I have this vivid memory of crawling down her hallway, and she lived like in a trailer. And I just remember the walls were just going like this and like this. And I got into the bathroom and I looked in the mirror, and I had an alcoholic mother who I was very angry at for a long, long time, and I swore I would never be like that. So that day, my first evening that I drank, I looked in the mirror and I saw her, and I cried. I immediately started crying. Like, my first drinking experience, and I'm already crying like an old girl, right? I looked in the mirror, and that was also the first time that I pledged never to drink again. That was the first time. So I said, you know, I'm never going to do this again. I'm not going to be like her. So I have like flashes of like waking up with like puke in my hair, like by the bathtub. I guess my friend was trying to get me to take a bath. I don't know what after that propelled me to drink again, but I did. So I knew that I was very angry, and I started getting into other outside issues. And around like 15 is when I got arrested for the first time. But it was also when I had my first spiritual experience, which plays a big role in my sobriety today. So I'm really grateful for that experience. It was Christmas Eve, and I had already moved out of my mom's house because I recognized the path that I was heading down, and I wanted to try to be better or have a better life. So moving my dad into Texas. So I was back for the holidays. It was Christmas Eve, and I was already in bed. A friend of mine that I hadn't seen in a while asked if I wanted to go to the store and get some snacks. So we go down to the store and we smoke some weed and, I mean, other outside issues. And his friend, who I didn't know, was driving on the wrong side of the road in like a residential area. So boom, you know, blue and red lights in there. So the cop that pulled us over decided he didn't want to do the paperwork for a minor, which was really great because it was Christmas Eve, you know? So we called my mom from down the street, and she got there to pick me up. And a second cop came up and pulled a little baggie of some other outside issues from under the passenger seat, which I had no idea were in the car. It was a substance that I had already partook in, but I hadn't in a while. So my mom got to watch me get arrested. For the first time on Christmas Eve. A few days later, I was in juvie, and I finally got to see a judge. They drug tested me and everything, and he was about to like release me to my dad, but then, you know, found out I had tested dirty, and said I needed to stay for 30 more days, or at least until I could produce a clean urine analysis. So I went back to my cell, And I felt like a complete failure because I really was trying to get better. And that's the whole point. I had moved. So this is when I had my first spiritual experience. I got down on my by my bunk. I was in tears. And I said, God, I know people only pray to you when shit hits the fan. And I just want you to know that that's not why I'm praying to you right now. I'm praying to you because, you know, whatever I'm supposed to learn from this moment, if you have me here for a reason, then I accept your will. Now, where I got that insight at 15 years old, I have no idea. And where it went after that, I don't know either. But it does play a big role, and especially like with the 11th step, when I pray, I have that memory. And I think it was a gift, you know, to get me through this point in my life. When I pray, that's what I practice, you know. For knowledge of its will for me, and the power to carry that out. So I was there for 20 minutes after that. I started reading to the girls, and they were braiding each other's hair. They liked it when I did that. So like about 20 minutes later, somebody comes and they say, Emma, you know, you're being released. So I had really felt that God had heard me. I really felt that he heard my prayer. And it could be a coincidence, but I know the feeling that I had after I said that prayer surrender and acceptance and peace. So fast forward, you know, I get through high school, I start college, and I go through my first breakup. I had been with this person for like 5 years. So I quit school. I decided that it was his thing, it wasn't mine. I was going to pursue my career as a musician. I had been a musician all my life. So I dropped out, and I have been studying. I got my associate's in substance abuse counseling, and I actually met Julie at my first job, Julie W., if any of you know her. So she was like my first boss. I was studying this just so I could get to a four-year program to study psychology. I had no indication at the time that I had an actual problem, even though the whole time I was studying, I was working at Bananas Billiards as a cocktail waitress and drinking almost every time I worked. So I didn't apply any of it to me. I didn't think that I had a problem. I had really convinced myself that I didn't, but it was after the breakup that my drinking went up a notch and I had quit school. And I really romanticized the idea of being a musician and the whole art romanticizing not being able to pay my bills and not having a home to live in and not having food. And I was really like living on the fringe, you know? It just got to a point where I realized I had hit a rock bottom of sorts, and all that education that I had gotten in that degree came rushing back to haunt me, and I really felt like this thing had me. I was like, okay, like, you know, this alcoholism thing, like, it's real, and it's got me by the balls right now. So I called my dad first, and I told him, I think I'm an alcoholic. And he told me, you just need to get a job. You just need to get a job. It's money in your pocket. You'll be fine. So I was like, okay, you know, and I tried telling a few other people. And that's why I think, you know, what we do is so important, is so crucial. Like, maybe had I reached out to the right person, you know, maybe I would have avoided a lot of suffering that came afterwards, because these people who were very close to me in my life helped me kind of deny that fact. It got worse from there. So I was playing, and I had an evening where a friend of mine that I had been seeing asked me if I wanted to go do like an open mic with him one night. And I had a UTI, so I wasn't going to like, sorry, that's too much info, but I wasn't going to go out that night. So I got out, and like typical alcoholic fashion, I was like, well, I'll only drink two drinks, because you're not supposed to drink when you have one of those. And I was also on antibiotics, but I was like, but I'll get drinks with cranberry juice. That was going to make it better. That's what I found out. So he sat me down that night and told me he had met somebody. And I, like, it came as like a huge flow. I liked him a lot more than I was like willing to admit. So at the end of the night, like just in an act of desperation, I asked him if he wanted to come home with me, and he said no, of course, you know. And I just felt really, really like bad about myself. And I was on the phone with my best friend, and of course he was like, you can do better than him, and I was crying, and it was late in the night, and as I put down the phone, I look up and I see her face, and I hear my windshield crack. So I stopped for a moment, and then I kept going. It's been about 5-6 years since that's happened. I've often had to deal with the fact that I was angry about it for a really long time. I wish that I had been more drunk. I wish that I had been blacked out. I wish that I could blame it on that. It almost would have been easier to know, like, you know, to not remember, to not live with memories, have something to blame it on, you know. But I made that decision, and I live with that every day. So if my drinking was already bad, it got worse. It got a lot worse. So, you know, I to deal with all the guilt, with the failure, with everything, it got way darker. And I quit for a while. I tried to stay, I think for like just like a few months, I stopped drinking. And then I had a whole bunch of legal stuff on my plate. And I decided to start a band. I decided if I was going to go away for a long time, then I would do something to live out my dream, because that would get me through if I went away for the rest of my life. I got arrested for failure to stop and render aid, and then I got out on bail, and I spent 3.5 years or so out on bail, still drinking, still partying. You would think that a tragedy of that magnitude would cause somebody to question, you know, maybe I should stop, but it didn't. So, again, cunning, baffling, and extremely powerful. April 1st, April Fool's Day, 2015, that's my sobriety date. I finally received the conviction, and the judge gave me 5 years. I went to Bexar County, and if any of you guys have been there, you know what hell looks like. The daughter of this woman, she was there that day. The woman was homeless. She had been out on the street for a while, and I had resentments towards that, and that they had found drugs in her system, that there was homelessness at all, and that it was a problem. I was mad at the system. I was mad at everything. My anger extended very far. So the daughter was there, and she got to lay it all out in front of my loved ones. There was no goodbyes. There was no hugs. She screamed at me. And finally, at the very end of it, she screamed, "I forgive you." And I wish I could say that I could have felt the gift of grace that woman gave me that day, but it's taken a lot longer than that. So I grappled with the fact that I was going away for 5 years. I finally got transferred to this facility in Lockhart, Texas. A company took over, and the warden there had decided that I should paint murals. So I painted murals for a year, and I didn't even know I had that gift in me, but I'm so grateful that I had that, because it really got me through that time. So when I got out, I got released after 18 months. That was a tremendous blessing. One of my first meetings that I went to, Julie W. was speaking. I was like, she looks really familiar, you know? She mentioned going to Lockhart. And I was like, that's where I was just released from. Did you see the murals, you know? And then I just forgot all about that interaction. She was like, I remember you. She remembered that I had worked with her. And
I forgot, a year later, you know, I'm going through the steps real slow. I had one sponsor and decided, I was like, I still don't know about this. I don't know about this program. I was required to go to AA by parole. And I was like, maybe I should get a new sponsor. And then I got a new sponsor. And then I was like, maybe it's not my sponsors. Like, maybe it's me. So I was like, maybe I should work some steps, you know? So I started with my sponsor who I am now. And I got through, you know, the first one was easy. I was like, powerlessness? Like, yeah, I just got out of prison. Like, fuck yeah, I'm powerless. You know, like, and the second one, you know, I was like, okay, you know, this is not so bad. Maybe I'll do the third one, you know. I didn't have to grapple too hard with the God thing. And I think that was, you know, a gift. It's just like one less hurdle that I had to overcome. And I'm really grateful for that. I know the God thing is a big deal for a lot of people. And all I can say is, you know, you can take it piecemeal. You don't have to swallow it all at once. You can practice it, you know. Pretend, you know, fake it till you make it, you know, whatever you got to do. It's just like when you start exercising, you know, like it sucks at first, but then you get into it and you realize it feels really good. It's really good for you. So I'm coming up on my 12th step. I'm almost there. And I'm here one Sunday, and Julie W.W. is speaking. And she mentions Lockhart again. And I know the 12th step is, you know, carry this message to alcoholics. And it's like a beam of light came down on me when she said it this time. And I actually, like, I heard God say, like, you're going back. So after the meeting was over, I went and I told her, like, I'm going to go with you. I'm going to go with you to the prison because you go to the one that I was at. And I was like, I'll email the warden. And, I was his art slave for like a year. So he said, you know, just email me if you want to come visit the murals, you know, and I'll let you come back. So I knew I wanted to go back. Like, somehow, some way, I knew I wanted to go back because there was a lot of volunteers that had gone in there and made my time just like a little bit easier. And the fact that they'd go in there and give up their Sundays or their Saturdays or their afternoons or whatever to come talk to us, like, made such a huge difference to me. I was like, I gotta go back and give back the same way that these people gave to me. So a few months go by, and I'm coming up on 1 year since I've been out. And the day comes, and we're going to Lockhart. And I really kind of like, it was real chaotic when I had told them I wanted to come with them. I don't think like everything had kind of like sunk in a lot. And I got to really tell them my story. So I think, you know, that was like the moment they were like, oh, like this is big, you know, and I'm making this journey that so many of my folks had made to come see me while I was there, like every weekend. And it was a very powerful moment for me. And to share that with them, like, was awesome. It's like God gave me these like three guardian angels to go with me through that experience. And what better way to go back than through this, which this specific program, which has given me so much, which has given me my life back. And so we get there, and I'm surprisingly like not nervous. Like, I'm more nervous speaking for you guys than I was going into the prison and speaking. And so at this point, you know, I've met Stella, and she's graciously driving us there. And I think that they were more nervous than I was. We go in, and I see the wardens, and they waited, they waited a little bit to see me. And we go in, and further in, and this lady recognizes me, who was there. Oh, my God, Emma, you know. And I look at Julie, and she's bawling. And I realize in that moment that experience was as much for them as it was for me. And they had decided that I was going to speak. That would be the first time I was going to speak. And I'm glad they didn't give me any forewarning, because, you know, I probably would have tried to prepare a little bit. And then the girls who were facilitating the meeting also decided that I would share. A lady who I'd never met before, she was like, oh, you know, you used to be here. And she got choked up, and she was like, it's really good to see somebody come back who's doing well. And that was like a powerful lesson in how just being present could have an impact in somebody's life, like just showing up, just being there. And so the ladies running the meeting had the same idea, and that would be the first time that I shared my story. And it went really well. It felt really good. And afterwards, you know, they thanked me,
And one lady in particular, she said, if there's any reason why you were meant to be here today and tell your story, it was for me. God sent you here for me. And that was just like, that was it. You know, I haven't been the same since that. And I'm really grateful. And I intend to continue being there for people and showing up for people. Because this has really saved my life, just doing that. So anyway, I appreciate you guys your time. So thank you.